Okay, do you want to kick things off, or?
Okay. Excuse me.
We have very bad audio quality, so.
Okay. Just the quality is bad. I'll try to keep my comments to the minimum. This is Brett Guerin, chair of working group.
Greg, I'm sorry, but we really can't hear you. They're asking you if you're on a cell phone.
No.
No. You're on a landline.
Can they call him?
Is it possible to dial out to him? Yeah. Greg, could you maybe send Margie your phone number so we'll dial out to you?
Okay, thank you.
Quite a bad line as well. Can you hear us okay?
Just fine. I'll let me see.
Okay. I think in the meantime, we're just going to get started with the meeting. First item on the agenda, can we project the screen? First item on the agenda is a roll call, so maybe we could start off with the members of the working group identifying themselves and announcing themselves. So maybe, Bo, we can start on your side.
Bo Brendler from the at-large.
I'm Joe Walden from VeriSign, representing Pat Kane.
Faza Shah with Mark Monitor.
Marjorie Milam, ICANN staff.
Rod Rasmussen with Internet Identity. James Liddell, GoDaddy.
Roland Perry here as an individual.
Okay.
Liz Gaster, ICANN staff.
Are there any other working group members? Are you a member of the working group? For now, restricting it to the members of the working group. We'll have a working session the first hour, and then the last 30 minutes are open for public participation and questions. We'll have an opportunity to ask questions. And of course, if during the meeting there are any clarifying questions, please feel free to raise your hand and ask questions. On the call, I don't know if people are already back, but we also have Barry Cobb and Greg Aaron. Did we already manage to dial out to Greg?
No.
Okay. Oh, we're waiting for his number. Can we get the screen up, please? So, for those of you that are new to this working group, I'm just going to provide a little update and background as to what this working group is tasked to do and the activities it has undertaken to date. So, I hope that's big enough for everyone. You're in the room as well. I'm just going to look at PowerPoint. It's easier. So, if you bear with me 2 seconds.
I think you should send it to me. You should send us number 3. Oh,
right there. Yeah, but I didn't want to upload everyone. So, there we go. So, a little bit of background. This issue was brought to the GNSO Council with a question asking, like, what kind of provisions...
They can't. If we call him, then we hang up on Barry. We only have one line, so.
Maybe you can give him a call and that he dials back in. I don't know otherwise.
Okay, maybe we'll just plug Greg to call back in.
Yeah. Apologies for the technical complications here. So basically, the question was raised, like, what kind of provisions do registries and registrars have to deal with abuse? And if they have those provisions, how effective are they actually in dealing with abuse? And also questions were asked, like, what role should ICANN have in this discussion, and what role should it play in addressing domain name registration abuse? So ICANN staff produced an issues report in September 2008 in which we found that there is no uniform approach by registries and registrars to address abuse. Some have provisions, some don't. Provisions differ. there's no clear definition of what abuse is. There are provisions that allow the takedown of domain names that are involved in abuse, but some don't have any provisions. So questions were asked as well, does it mean that those registries or registrars then don't do anything just because they don't have the provisions? So in order to address some of those questions, the council decided, instead of immediately going for a policy development process, to first have a kind of pre-policy development process working group that would look at a number of these questions, undertake some additional research and discussion, and basically be tasked to identify specific questions that might be suitable for GNSO policy development. So, and the council agreed as well that they would not take a decision on whether or not to initiate an actual policy development process until the working group presents its conclusions and recommendations to the council. So a first update was provided to the council on the 2nd of June. This was a requirement that this group had in its charter. And in the status update, it outlined the activities it had undertaken till date, which included the organization of a workshop at the ICANN meeting in Mexico City. We have ESSEC participation and collaboration in this group, and the group spent quite some time discussing the scope and definition of registration abuse. Since then, the group has been meeting on a biweekly basis. So what has been accomplished to date? The working group has developed a working definition of abuse and has developed a list of abuses, which they are exploring further. So these have been categorized in pre-registration abuses, registration abuses, post-registration abuses, and domain name use abuse issues. And the intention of the group is to work through all of these identified abuses, come up with a definition, identify the issues, and proposed recommendations for the council to consider. So a number of sub-teams have been created to address a number of other questions that were raised in the charter of this working group relating to uniformity of contracts. So a sub-team has been analyzing abuse provisions in the different registrar contracts. This group will also be looking at the question, like, does it matter, should you have uniformity? Is there any benefit in having uniformity, or what is the value of going down that path, and how effective are existing provisions in dealing with abuse? Then there's also some groups that are looking at more work around cyber squatting, front running, malware and botnet control, phishing, spam, malware. So all, again, working on defining these issues, getting to a common understanding of the problem, and developing some recommendations for the council to consider. So as mentioned, there's still quite some work that needs to be done in this group. The Uniformity of Contracts sub-team meeting now has the data available on, you know, what provisions do exist, but now they'll need to answer some questions related to, well, how does that matter? And would there be, is there a desire to have more uniformity in contracts? And what are the potential impacts on that? For example, some questions that have been raised, would that take away the current possibility or creativity or flexibility that registrars have to deal with abuses, and especially new kinds of abuses, where now they often work on a case-by-case basis and based on good relationships in addressing these issues? If you would create certain standard provisions, would that mean that everyone follows the same rules, and might it make it easier for those that are involved in abuse to go around the rules and just engage in something that cannot be addressed through those provisions? So those are a number of questions that this group will need to look at. Another task was added to the list of issues that this group needs to look at in relation to fast flux. This was another policy development process that was undertaken a couple of months ago. And one of the recommendations that this group made was for the Registration Abuse Policies Working Group to examine whether existing policy may empower registries and registrars, and including that in the consideration questions related to adequate indemnification to mitigate illicit uses of fast flux. So So, and then there's still some outstanding items on the list of abuses that this group will need to work through, which include pay-per-click abuses, fake renewal notices, domain kiting, and there's some questions as well as who should be part of these discussions, as I think in many of the abuses we've identified, who is plays some kind of role at some point down the line. But of course, you know, who is specifically, you know, who is in itself is not a specific topic of this group. So it's likely that this group will come up with a number of recommendations in different kinds of categories, which might include recommendations for a number of policy development processes. Consideration might be given to development of voluntary best practices, or there might be as well requests for specific contract changes to be considered by the GNSO Council. But again, all of these recommendations will need to be considered by the GNSO Council, who will need to initiate the appropriate process for each of these potential recommendations to actually take the next step. So just want to make clear that, you know, it's not this group that will make the actual proposals for changes to policies or contracts, but it will make recommendations on for which issues should be taken further through different mechanisms to come to recommendations for changes. So this group, you know, has already been ongoing for quite some time, and it's not because they haven't been doing any work, but it has been because, you know, there are a lot of really complicated issues that garner a lot of discussion. There are a lot of different viewpoints in this group. So that has resulted in quite extensive discussions and negotiations on the different issues. So one of those issues is who is, what role should it play? There are, I think, different perceptions in the group, whether it is in the remit of this group to make recommendations that might affect who is or further investigation of who is, as this is, as everyone, I think, is aware of, a very sensitive topic, and a lot of work has already gone into that. So that's a question that will need to be addressed. Then questions related to scope, intent, legal ramifications, the difference between registration abuse, which is within ICANN's remit to address, versus domain name use abuse, which goes beyond the scope of ICANN. And of course, where do you draw the line? In many instances, I think we've seen that there's quite a gray zone involved, and it's not very black and white to say, okay, this is really only registration abuse and that's only domain name use abuse. So that requires a lot of discussion as well to get through those issues. A lot of the topics require substantive work. There's a lot of research involved, further discussion, gathering data. So it's not an easy task to give a clear deadline as to when this work will be completed, but I think we have on the agenda a wish to maybe try to get this done by the next ICANN meeting, or at least have an initial report to present to the community and put out for public comment at that time. So going forward, we're having today our public meeting here, and I'm just hoping that everyone has come with a lot of questions and comments for the group to take into consideration in their deliberations. The working group will go forward and at their usual schedule, meeting every 2 weeks. The chair, Greg Aaron, unfortunately couldn't be here, but he is on the phone, and I hope the quality of the line has maybe improved a bit so he can actually contribute as well. And Mike Gronenberg, who's the council liaison, but I don't think he's present at the moment. So are there any questions on this overview and the activities to date? I'm happy to provide, I don't think it's on these slides, I'm happy to provide you as well with links to some further information and the working group workspace where you can find some of the documents and some of the sections where the group is working on defining the different abuses. So if you can just come to me after the meeting to see that. So Greg, are you back on the line?
Yes, Mike, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I think it's a bit better now.
Thank you very much for that overview. That's much appreciated. And since I am, Marika is going to be recognizing speakers and helping to moderate the meeting today. As you mentioned, the first part of this meeting is going to be a continuation of the working group's discussion. And then for at least the last half hour, we hope to open up the conversation to the broader community for questions and answers and so forth. Regarding that ongoing work, we have with us Barry Cobb. Barry, are you able to hear me on the line?
Yes, Barry, I can hear you, but I think echo is probably my fault.
Okay.
So I'm going to try hanging up.
Barry, we can hear you very badly.
Okay. Barry has been leading a subgroup.
Greg, hold on a second, because the quality is still very bad. I'm just looking over at the tech people to see what's going on. Hold on a second. Greg, are you on the speakerphone? Oh, okay.
No.
Okay, he's not on the speakerphone.
Barry, Barry, okay. But anyway, maybe Barry will be able to rejoin us. We have a group working on uniformity of contract, and that's the next item on our agenda. Are there other members of that subgroup present in the meeting?
James is here. James, I do have the, but I think we went over it last time, but maybe you know, for the public interest, I do have the slides that Barry put together, if you want me to pull those up.
Thank you, Marika. That would be great. I would be happy to jump in cold and do my best to get us through this section. I should mention that most of the heavy lifting has been done by Barry Cobb, who I understand we're having difficulties reaching. This wouldn't be the first time that I had to throw this thing on the shoulders there. And that's okay. So Marika's pulling that up now. Right. So while Marika's pulling up those slides, the purpose of this subgroup was to examine the registration agreements of various registrars and attempt to catalog whether or not they contained provisions that would give the registrar the ability to address certain types of abuse. We've had to take care in a few situations to because, of course, and I see at least a couple of lawyers within arm's length, that we don't want this to turn into a comparative legal review where one method or one approach is better than the other. For example, if one registration agreement lists or enumerates all the different types of abuses and another one, for example, just has a universal terms of service that just mentions abuse and leaves all the discretion to the registrar. So that's something we've tried to stay away from, making those sort of judgment declarations. Instead, what we've done and what Barry has done is, and we can go through the slides now that Marika has them up, but I'll just finish up this part. What we've done is we've comprised them all into a visually pleasing and organized spreadsheet that indicates what can be found where. So hopefully the folks who are remote and can see what we can see here in the room, which is the beginning of the presentation on the uniformity of contract subteam charter. This was done by Barry. And the first slide here indicates what within the this working group's charter prompted this effort. And it is this particular section here in the kind of off-orange box here that states that there should be some understanding of what contractual remedies registries and registrars have. I think, or do we just focus on registrars, or was it registries as well? And I can't read the charter from here, so
I think the initial research was focused on registrars, okay. But the idea was as well to cover registries, but a lot of the work on registries was already covered as well in the issues report.
Thank you.
This smaller group, so it was easier to take the provisions from those agreements directly.
Understood. I tend to think of them as a group when I think contracted parties, but but this is specifically for registrars. So this is the section of the charter that kicked off this effort, where we broke off into a sub-team led by Barry to gather the registration agreements and review them as they are applied to various types of abuse. These bullet points here on this slide will outline kind of the approach, collect and analyze publicly available contracts, so we're not asking for anything behind the curtains or any type of business practices. There's the word registries again, but try to ensure that we're capturing all the the relevant elements there. Attempt to quantify the current state, the purpose of providing visual representation. So what we were trying to do with this slide, and if I'm understanding this bullet point, is that we were trying to develop a score that indicated how far the registrars were apart on various issues. So whereas uniformity might mean a low score, and a higher score would indicate a higher degree of dispersion in the various segments. And then we would correlate all those. Now, this is a very, very extensive spreadsheet that has been shrunk down to almost a thumbnail here. It's color-coded, it's broken off into various sections, but I think that, you know, from this vantage point, it is easy to see that there is a high degree of dispersion on a lot of these, and what it means is that we don't see a lot of the dark green bars going all the way across horizontally, and that's indicating that that they are there are differences in how registrars are approaching these issues in their registration agreements. Oh, I'm sorry. Can we go back just one more moment there? And across the top, there was a an indication that these are anonymized responses and that they are separated by region. So I think that not by country. So for example, we didn't say United States or Canada. We just said North America. Is that correct? Okay. And so in this slide, Barry provided a somewhat of a key to understanding the columns under each registrar header. I think that there was a great effort to ensure that as much market coverage as possible and that there was as much diversity from the different regions as possible.
Barry just noted on the Adobe Connect that it does include, I think it has the headings of the regions, but underneath that it does specify countries.
Okay. Thank you. I'm glad he's watching over us, if only in a text capacity. Okay, this slide demonstrates or illustrates how the various RAP abuse categories that were defined earlier in this effort align to text provisions within the registration agreement of each registrar. And in some cases, this was, a bit of a hunting expedition on Barry's part. You know, some registration agreements may say spam, others may say bulk unsolicited email, or refer to it as other types of abuse as well. So, you know, finding what exactly or mapping the provisions in the agreement to the categories was a big part of what he'd done for this group. I think now we get into the actual spreadsheet, which I'm hoping we're not going to put up on the screen, because that would be...
No, maybe just for those of you that are really interested to see this, this is also on the working group wiki again, so
yeah.
People can come to me afterwards and we can share the information.
Yeah, I have two 17-inch monitors on my desk, and it's still difficult to kind of take it all in. So here are, what does this all mean? We've got some really great data. Clearly, it took a lot of effort to collect and categorize that and then put it into some sort of a meaningful and digestible format. But ultimately, we want to reach some conclusions, and I think that we've got a couple of options outlined here. One would be further research. I'm going to editorialize here a little bit as a registrar and say that I would like, if we were to go forward with this information, for registrars to have an opportunity to correct anything that they feel is a discrepancy, for example. Maybe we didn't understand something, or maybe it's in a different agreement, something of that nature. I think that remaining the status quo, no changes, I think that's fairly apparent. develop abuse standards or best practices with voluntary adoptions was one option, and recommend increased uniformity in contracts with respect to abuse. And this was coming up with essentially a common denominator of abuse or portfolio of abuse provisions that all registrars might in some future contract be required to include in their registration agreement. And that's one possibility as well. And of course, whenever you've tackled an interesting subject with a breadth of research, if you're doing it correctly, it raises just as many questions as it answers. And that's certainly the case with this group. So, you know, some of the questions outlined here, and I can go through them individually. So what are the pros and cons of uniformity? Is uniformity desired? Is uniformity necessarily a benefit? Could it have unintended consequences? For example, we've discussed the possibility that bad actors might have the ability to compromise one registrar, and now they've compromised them all, you know, as one possible answer. But what would be the benefit to registries and registrars, to registrants? Could such an animal even be developed that would be equally palatable across different jurisdictions and different market segments, I believe, which may not be on the slide, but something we discussed. So the difference between, for example, a retail registrar like GoDaddy and a more wholesale registrar might not be readily interchangeable. And second one would be what market conditions could or would occur with uniformity. So this is getting back to the unintended consequences. If uniformity is determined to be desired, then how would that be implemented and enforced? And, you know, and what does that mean for compliance activities and efforts? And finally, what would the impacts be to liability and changes to indemnification? And I think the point of this particular slide is that if a registrar is following in, I can prescribed and mandated process in dealing with a an abuse condition, what protections does that registrar have against anything, especially in the case of false positives? So here are our conclusions. Increased consistency across contracts creates a level playing field amongst registrars. If policies are consistent, then responsibility of enforcement moves from the registrar into falls to ICANN. Some lowest common denominator or minimum baseline of requirements of abuse provisions would be something that would be desirable, and we should understand the cost projections for implementations and all of those things should factor into our final recommendations. Okay, next slide is what's next, and it just shows how we plan to bring this back to the at-large RAP working group and discuss the what to do with this research and how it factors into the overall work of the group. Is that covered? Is that the end of the slide deck?
Yes, okay. It is.
So this has been a really, I think, you know, it was just a few lines in the charter, but it was definitely a lot of work. And, you know, of all that, I think the bulk of that fell to Barry. You know, I think Mikey and I were able to, and Mike Rodenbaugh, I think you were on some of those calls as well, were able to kind of, you know, guide some of our thinking here. But hopefully it's useful, and hopefully it will help to inform some of the further deliberations in this area.
Thanks, James. Barry did mentioned that he had some other updates, so maybe we give a last attempt to see if we have some better quality on the phone line. Barry, do you want to give it a try?
Yes. Can you hear me now?
We can hear you, but the line's still breaking up a bit. Let's try. Barry, go ahead. I'm sorry, Barry. We really can't hear you. I apologize for the bad sound quality. So I think that the follow-up you have, we will probably have to take at the next meeting of the Registration Abuse Working Group. Are there any questions on discussions on the update from the members of the working group? Bo?
Yeah, could you go back to the previous slide, I think it is. Yeah, the third point there, I'm having trouble actually understanding what that means. Could you translate really the third and fourth bullets there into lay language?
I can give my interpretation, I'm sure. Well, maybe James, go ahead.
I can take a shot at that. And hi, Bo. So, throughout this, I think this exercise, we discovered that the registration agreements were very much a patchwork. They may work well for a particular registrar in a particular market and for their situation, but what we were trying to determine was whether or not having a prescribed set of provisions developed by ICANN policy and required to be incorporated in registrant agreements would be helpful in this area. Currently, there are a few models for that. One is, for example, the agreement to pass along, or the requirement to pass along information regarding the UDRP. You know, where whether you're signing a piece of paper or checking a box, it says in there that you agree that UDRP is, you know, you're going to, you know, abide by this policy, et cetera. So can that be extended to other areas with a set of provisions relative to abuse? And then the question, I think, goes down to the next one, which is how do you develop, implement, monitor, and, of course, modify and keep those up to date for the, you know, changing abuse landscape, and what are the costs associated with that? You know, what does that do for ICANN compliance headcount, for example? You know, how quickly could something like that be rolled out? So I think that's roughly what those last two bullet points are saying, but I will certainly defer to Barry in the little teeny text box there in the middle of the left column if he has anything he'd like to add to that synopsis.
And I think maybe to add to that, I think another point I recall from the discussions we had that there's concern as well that if you set, you know, the bar low doesn't mean that everyone will stay low. How can you ensure that people don't see that as a restriction, that they can't do more than what you might set as a minimum standard? So that was, I think, one of the other points of discussion, to ensure that you don't make the minimum as well at the same time the highest standard.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. You'll always have registrars. I think, you know, it's a spectrum, and, you know, we have folks that are really leading the charge in this area and that are dedicating resources, people, and dollars and expertise to the problem, and that you're going to have some folks that maybe don't have or don't wish to make the same commitment. Maybe it's just not compatible with what they're trying to do with their registrar business. So the question then on the table, and I don't think we've really tried to answer it, we just tried to put some boundaries around the idea that if you set out a minimum out there somewhere, you're telling folks what you know, what they need to do to get a passing grade, and then will those folks see it as a competitive disadvantage to do more?
Are there any other comments, questions?
Joe Walden from VeriSign. So I think on that same point, the adding in the registry component of this would probably also be applicable in terms of setting the minimum standard, because there may be specific requirements within a TLD that would cause you to have additional definitions of abuse for a special use TLD. So that may be one of the incremental things that would be above the standard baseline.
Other? Go ahead.
So I just, by the way, I think you guys did a great job in the subgroup, and it's just a lot of great information. I guess I was just wondering about some of the sections I think it's on page 6. So is it contemplated that these are the categories that we would want to have uniformity on, and then maybe in the other categories maybe have some discussion of what else would apply? I mean, what's your thinking around that?
That's a good question. I think at this point the thinking is that we were trying to map what we could find in the registration agreements to those types of abuse that we had previously defined in this group. I really hadn't taken it to that next step yet, but it was more of a mapping exercise. We spent the first, I think, 3-4 weeks of this working group identifying and defining different abuse types, and then we went back and then just kind of took that list and took it back to the registration agreements.
So when you kind of went through all the agreements, these were pretty much the ones that kind of stuck out as being, you know, the ones we needed to address from all of them. Is that how it kind of came?
Yeah, I think that's correct. We went back to our earlier work, and we were kind of building upon that. If there are other types that are missing, or if you think that some of these might be duplicative or something, you know, I mean, that's certainly up for discussion as well. But we just kind of took the list that we arrived at in the first phase, if you will, of this group, and took that back to the contracts.
That's a good job, by the way.
That's all Barry. Barry gets all the credit, and if there's any blame to go around, I'm sure Mike, you know, will. No, you know, Barry did a lot of the heavy lifting on this.
And Barry's providing as well some comments on the Adobe chat room, so you can see it there as well. Any other comments or questions on this issue? So then the next item on the agenda is a spam phishing malware discussion of a concise statement of the problem issue as a way to help crystallize the issues. What are the policy issues here, and what might fall into other areas? So I think this is an area that Greg has been working on. I know, Greg, should we give another go to see if your line is maybe better?
Phishing and malware abuse problem. It's just fast posting.
I'm really sorry, Greg, but it starts out well, but it then goes really bad.
Can I make a thought here?
Yeah.
I don't know if you've tried Skype, but I've been calling my wife from the hotel just about every night, and it is fantastic. The bandwidth in this country is amazing.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a problem of the line or it's the conference bridge that's causing the problem. I'm not sure. I don't know.
I'm just putting that out there as a suggestion, because anything that's IP-based seems to just fly.
Could that potentially help if you were down in using Skype?
I don't have the headset for Skype right now with me. And I've tried dialing in from two different lines, so I think it's a conference bridge.
I think someone is hearing you, because we see you we see what you're saying on the screen, but we're actually not hearing you. So I don't know, Rod, were you involved in this activity as well? Would you be able to give an update?
As far as I know, we don't have much of an update since the last meeting. There were a couple of conferences in between the last meeting and this meeting, so I don't believe that either Greg or I had a chance to do anything, unless Greg has a comment he wants to put on the chat board. I don't see one yet, but I know that he'd been doing some updates. Well, he doesn't have a Skype headset. I can see that. In general, this issue is surrounding the usage of domain names to support spam campaigns, phishing campaigns, malware dropping, etc. And there's been a discussion back and forth as to whether this is a use abuse or can be categorized as a registration abuse. And I see some comments from Greg here. Bad things people are doing with domains. Yeah, exactly.
I think the point he's making that breaks off is like, I think these issues are issues of domain name use. Bad things people are doing with domains. So I think he's making the point that these shouldn't be considered registration abuse?
Right, and I think that's one side of the argument. I'm here, so I've got the microphone for the other side of the argument, or at least a partial one, and that a lot of this abuse can be, or the people who are setting these campaigns up can be identified at the time of registration with, in many cases, 100% certainty, and in other cases, very high certainty. We've been going back and forth a little bit about that as to how you do that. The question, I think, in the area that we want to concentrate in on here is how can we utilize information about abusive actors during the registration process to keep them off the system in the first place. I don't think that the found abuse later on in the process, I guess, would qualify under this particular working group necessarily, other than as a feedback loop into blocking potential abusers from coming into the system again in the future, kind of a feedback cycle of keeping track of the data around who the bad actors are and how they're configuring their domain names. So that's kind of the other side of the argument, I guess, or I don't even know if it's a side, much more of a kind of a different way of looking at things.
Greg is making a point on the Adobe Connect that he thinks that these are some fairly rare cases in which intent can be established at the time of registrations, but they are rare. James, Roland?
Yeah, and I just wanted to say it's not really a debate so much as a difference in philosophy and an understanding that, I think that the difference in philosophy about the police versus the fire, type of analogy where, do we want, is it feasible or even possible for registries and registrars to be policing their zone versus having a very effective and rapid response to any type of problem that's reported? And I think that it is very, very sensitive, this concept of intent, and we shouldn't just, kind of get that swept along for the ride. We have to be able to identify how someone intends to use a domain. What this proposes is that we are able to, with 100 or near 100% accuracy, identify how someone intends to use a domain at the time of registration, or slightly before, I guess, in the purchase path or the registration process, so that we can terminate that. Now, just for statistics, and I think it's something that's public knowledge, is that we register a new domain name a couple thousand since I started this sentence. So, it has to be an automated process. It's just it's something that we have to consider operationally and from a practical perspective. I think that anyone that's worked with most of the registrars, especially those that participate in these types of efforts at ICANN, knows that they are very responsive and very committed to this issue. But putting in any side of a pre-screening of any type of registration it has some challenges associated with it. So it's not a debate necessarily, more just a differing perspective or differing philosophical approach.
This is Roland Perry. I must give my apologies. I have another meeting that I must dash off to as soon as I've made this intervention. This is going to sound a little bit like some of the discussions to do with intellectual property and trademarks, but as I understand it, there's now a rule in the Swedish CCTLD that you cannot register a domain name with the letters BANK in it unless you get some approval in advance. Is actually very similar to a system in the United Kingdom where if you wish to register a company name, there's a list which has got on it for sure things like bank, royal, and a few other kind of important sounding words, and you therefore have to, if you want a company registered with that in its name, you have to provide some kind of proof. I think International is another one. So if you want to register Roland's International Trading Company Limited, I would have to prove to the company registrar that I had some kind of internationalness about my business. Otherwise, it would be regarded as possibly deceiving the consumer into believing I'm a bigger and more important organization than I really am. So there is a possibility here that you could draw up a similar kind of list which would be automatically applied to domain names, and it wouldn't ban you from registering those domain names. It would just bump you into an adjudication process, where somebody would have to sit down and say, oh, yes, you really are a bank. Look, you're registered with your country's financial services regulator. That's okay then.
Bo?
My comment is along the lines of Roland's. It's just it's difficult for me to understand, given the nature of what I've seen with some types of repeated abuse, that there's not a way to, and again, I apologize, I've been largely an observer in a lot of the proceedings and haven't spent time listening to the discussion or this particular part of the debate, but if somebody's trying to register Citibank with a Y and Citi-Bank with a Y and Citibank with an I, and you know they're coming in from Nigeria or something, and that it just seems to me that there are some indicators, and Roland has put it more intelligently than I am, that I have difficulty believing that these circumstances are rare. And in terms of response time, also from what I know about how some cyber criminals behave, you know, response time is too late. I mean, the movement on some of these registrations and their use is very rapid. So I would have to put myself on the side of the philosophical argument that it is possible to make some determination of intent of abuse.
Yep, go ahead.
Yeah, and I see and fully embrace a lot of the things that you're raising, Bo. But I would just like to point out that we're not building a spam filter. You know, one false positive, and we are in big, big trouble. You know, it's not the question of, oh, I think, you know, a message was picked up by a spam filter and inadvertently I got a false positive. If we block a legitimate registration, could be an inconvenience, could lose a customer, could end up in court. So, and anything on that perspective. Mike's shaking his head, so I'm going to start edging the microphone over this way. But I'm just saying that we're very cautious about this, okay? You know, maybe you disagree with my list of the potential outcomes, but it is slightly different than a dropped email. It has a larger impact, potentially. And I think it's something that we should just take care of and be mindful of.
Mike, go ahead. While you've unplugged it. So maybe in the meantime, Rod, you can already give some thought to, you know, what could be potential policy development or solutions that might address the issues raised, but also James's concerns.
Yeah, so I think that maybe a better analogy for thinking about some of this is what we do with credit card verification already, in that there's a process where you have known bad actors, known bad credit cards. I think that really, and we're not trying within this group to solve the problem. The question is, do we carve out an area for further study? And I think in that regard, this area is one that can be studied some more. And so this question, you know, Greg brought up an important point. Is this rare or not? In my purview, I don't think it is. But then again, I'm not registering 2,000 domain names a second either. So, you know, what is rare? Yeah, sentence per sentence, sorry. There's the issue of where do you get that data? I know a lot of people do things already for looking at IP addresses that are being used to sign up, you know, whether it's a domain registration or an AdWords type thing or all kinds of online services. There are various aspects of communications and registration configurations for all kinds of services where people and companies are taking proactive measures to block bad actors. Then the question is, okay, are we doing that? And it would be an area of study, I'd say, for the registrar community as it stands today, and to see what kind of practices are going on in that regard. And then also, what are the provisions around perhaps sharing data between registrars, maybe even registries, about bad actors and how they operate, so that as a community we can keep the bad actors from abusing the registration process.
James?
Yeah, and that's awesome. That's, in fact, you know, what I think in practice is that registrars will try to thread that needle. you know, maybe they're not blocking registrations, but they get enough indicators, they will flag it, and it will be subject to a further intensive examination by human eyeballs before it's allowed to be put through the process. But, yeah, absolutely right. And I didn't mean to present it necessarily as an either-or proposition. I think we are trying to borrow a little bit from column A and column B. Thanks.
And I just wanted to put a couple other thoughts on this. The bank thing in Sweden actually got revoked. So that actually, because of issues and problems. So that's actually something we can learn from, I think. And there are other, you know, looking at strings being used in registrations. The latest report that Greg Aaron and I co-authored on from the APWG, looking at malicious domain registrations, only about 3% of the domain names used for phishing actually contained a brand or a brand equivalent typo type of thing in them. So it's that is a rare occasion. And it's 3%, I guess it depends on what your definition of rare is. But it's a very low percentage are actually using brands, whereas if of the domains that are maliciously registered, the vast majority of them are using nonsense characters and things like that, and then using the DNS system to add a brand name either in the host name part or the URL path to fool people.
Sorry, are you a member of the working group?
Yeah, means I'm observing here as part of ALEC. I'm Vivek from ALEC.
But we're opening up the meeting shortly for...
Just one question I wanted to ask was, is proxy registration has a certain perspective to this phishing and malware and other things? Can anyone respond to that? That the whole proxy registration, does it have a clear link to phishing or malware other practices?
I don't think that's an issue this group is considering. I'm sure Rod is happy to respond offline after this meeting and discuss it, but it's not a specific issue this group is discussing or researching in this point in time, as far as I'm aware.
And I believe that compliance is researching that right now to get a much more qualified answer to your question. That's a question we have in the abuse community as well. There's evidence that it is, but it's not necessarily a strong correlation. It depends on where you're looking.
Are there any other comments or questions on this update from the working group before we move into the public part of our meeting? Mike,
just curious, what are the next steps on this piece of the working group? The phishing malware piece, where are we with that, and what's going on next?
Well, what we have now is on the wiki, and I think we still need to complete the different items here. I think that the questions that Greg raised in the agenda are, you know, we need to discuss in the group some of the questions, like what are the policy issues here, what areas might be covered by other potential solutions to the best practices. I think it's going back a bit to the discussion we had now and fleshing that out, what parts might be suitable for recommendations in relation to policy development and then which parts fall outside of that registration abuse part and are more related to the domain name use abuse. So I think we have a sub-team, as you can see here. I think it's Greg. Martin is here as well. You're part of this group too. and Mike O'Connor that are working out these issues. So I don't know if Martin, is there any, well, what are your next steps in this group? Are you aware?
As clear as Rod had suggested earlier, I think we've still got quite a few things to go through here. The one thing I'd just add on to your summary there was the consideration of research. So it's a bit more clear in some of the things that we're looking at.
And Greg had it up on the chat just a minute ago, but it's James had to talk, so it's got there we go. It's been scrolled back. That we need to come up with the concise state problem statement and then some recommendations to move out from the subgroup to the main group, and that we will be working on here in the next few weeks.
Okay, so I think now we're going to move on to the public part of our session. So I would like to open up the discussion for
for those of you that are here and are not members of the working group to raise your questions or put forward your points of view so the group can take these into consideration. And so, please go ahead.
My name is Rudy Vansnik from the At-Large, Sissi Nazo Liaison from ALAC. I'm just wondering, I've seen so many information in this work group, and while having all this information, why could the work group not start to take one issue and go on in a practical sense to try to tackle that issue with real practical proposals instead of waiting till you can solve all of it? Because the consumer cannot wait till the problem is solved. The consumer is at the basis of having a good service. And if the consumer just discovers that he is attacked by spam mails, by phishing mails, and so on, he will leave the internet space because he is no longer served by what he receives. And if policy just waits till everything can be solved, well, I think that within 10 years from now, we'll maybe have a solution.
Just to comment on that, I do believe, and anyone can correct me here if I'm wrong, once we get to the stage where we indeed have more substantive information and agreement around some of these different types of abuses, I think if there's a clear indication that on some there's real consensus on what the recommendation should be to the GNSO Council on what next steps to take, but if there are others that really require more work and discussion, I think it's not unlikely for this group to put forward already those where there's clear agreement and consensus and leave those items that, there's no consensus or really require further work and discussion to a later stage.
I agree with that, Marika, and also I would want to say that I think your frustration is shared by a lot of in the community, we also see a lot of these issues as being very interrelated and interdependent. So it's very difficult to extract out one issue and say, let's get going on this while this other stuff sorts itself out, because unfortunately what you'll do is you'll find yourself circling back to address a lot of the things. They're very closely related.
You just follow on and maybe get an estimate of how long this is going to take to get to a point where we might be suggesting to council, and I must apologize as the council liaison, I've kind of fallen off the map in this group the last month or so, and other than in the sub-team with Barry and James. So I don't know, Greg, I know you can hear me, but you can't speak, but you can chat and we can read your chat, so don't say anything too mean, it is public. But do you have an estimate as you sit there, Greg, as the chair, knowing all the pieces that are going on with the group right now, as to when you think this work will be done? It's the end of agenda. We will discuss.
Yes.
All right. Thanks, Greg.
So we can take that as part of the discussion now, because the next point in part of, in addition to the questions and discussion is, the proposal to discuss the delivery of an initial report by the next ICANN meeting in Nairobi in March of next year. So, well, I see you sighing, Mark, but of course the only way to get this work done is to have more participation and more work being done between calls, because that's one of the challenges this group has faced, that there are a lot of people showing up for the calls, but, apart from, I guess, Barry, James, some other of the sub-teams are doing a lot of groundwork, but, some of the work is lagging because, I understand people are stretched, not everyone has time, but if we really want to get this done in a timely manner, we'll all need to put our minds to that, and I'm more than happy to try to already gather some of the information that we've put together and try to already start building a draft report if that makes it easier for people to start feeding in information there. I'm happy to facilitate that process. So,
I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe we are at a point where we can go back to council and start a policy development process. We've determined that that the contracts are not uniform. I think we're pretty close as a group to coming to consensus that they ought to be, at least at some minimum standard. Certainly we came to that consensus in our subgroup in any event. I haven't heard any real opposition to that notion from anybody else when we discussed it today or otherwise. So maybe that's enough. Maybe we go to council now and we commission another group that decides what those minimum standards ought to be.
Just before we go there, I just want to point out that Greg is making a comment because the work plan of this group is to go to have an initial report and put it out for and allow for public comment so people can provide input. So I think that's the point Greg is making. But James?
Oh yeah, I just as a chair of a working group that was also suffering from calendar slip, I think Greg would possibly. If were he here or audible, he would say, but let's use this as a, and let's channel that frustration, sir, with, as a call for recruitment and further participation. And, Mike, I'm ready to get going on some of these things here, but I would also point out that the people likely to participate in the PDP are also the ones that are bogged down in this particular, so parallelizing that may be a little more difficult unless we can get a whole new set of volunteers to step up and get involved.
Yeah, please go ahead.
Well, thank you for the information, and indeed we will try to participate as much as we can from the at-large group. It is of our concern, and I organized in Mexico in the e-crime panel a thematic session on registry and registrar and abuse of domains, as we are concerned that there should be a solution. And we will try to get more people involved from the consumer base because they are needed also. However, I'm afraid that knowing that bad guys are trying to follow also the debates and the discussions, that they will easily find a way when you have standards and policy ready to implement. They are going to be ready to go around your policy. And that's why further delay is a danger for the final policy you are going to put on.
Any other comments or questions? No one? Go ahead.
Is the initial report going to be separated into different subgroups with their findings in each of the subgroups and recommendations from subgroups that is then compiled into the whole initial report, which is then submitted to the GNSO? Is that how?
I think the idea behind the subgroups was that they would come up with their conclusions or recommendations, but that they would first be discussed and endorsed.
By the entire group?
Yes, by the entire group before that goes into an initial report. At least that was my understanding of the creation of the subgroups.
I just wanted to point out that Greg is making some comments. There in the text box. Sorry?
He's saying I'm right.
Okay. He's taking a lot of text to say that, so maybe.
He's also suggesting that, perhaps we ought to have more frequent meetings, which perhaps is a good idea at this point to accelerate things a little bit, but I'll leave that up to everybody else to let us know their thoughts on that as well. But I do think, Marika, I think we should take you up on your offer to get what you can on paper so we know what the holes are. We can start chewing on the pieces that are done, essentially.
I'm happy to get that started.
Are you planning to have also some involvements of resellers? I think resellers are just a thought. Because I know the discussion a few minutes ago was about registrations and figuring out a few things, and I can see both sides of the argument. However, I also think resellers have a lot of the problem, specifically web hosting companies.
So generally the way that is handled in around ICANN is that resellers are essentially bound to the same contract that the registrars are bound, the RIA. So I think certainly one of the outcomes of if this group could be a recommendation that resellers be specifically bound to whatever we come up with as far as minimum standards, and that should go into the next iteration of the RIA. Unfortunately, we are talking about amending the RIA now. There's another team effort going on discussing potential amendments to the RIA, so that the work dovetails nicely. Assuming that group agrees that amendments are necessary, then these will go. Otherwise, the fact is the RIA is very difficult to amend, and it takes time. You have to do it on kind of a rolling basis as the existing ones expire. So the other option is to simply make it consensus policy, which then is automatically applicable via the RIA, and that will require a PDP. So we're a little bit of a ways off, but no doubt that the resellers are on, I think, everybody's mind in this group.
Yes, to add a comment to this discussion is that I think that the resellers' agreements are not identical if you look at GTLDs and CCTLDs. What I see is that in the CCTLD world, the resellers are almost free to do whatever they want. So maybe there is something to do in regards policy on how to handle that issue.
Unfortunately, we can only deal with GTLDs in the GNSO, so you'll have to take that up in the CCNSO, I'm afraid.
But rest assured that that also would be the plan. Once we come up with something, it will go out to the CCNSO as at least a recommendation, and many of them will adopt it.
So talking about the RAA, maybe to make a little plug for the meeting that's taking place later this afternoon for those of you that are interested, and Margie can give you the details.
Yes, we have a drafting team meeting today at 5:30 to 7 in Sapphire 4, which is this room. So any of you interested in these topics as they relate to the RAA amendments process, please come, and we welcome your involvement.
Is that part A or B?
It's actually both. We have A and B meeting together.
Are there any other items people would like to raise or discuss? I think then we might as well finish early. I think the next meeting of the working group will be in 2 weeks' time on Monday, usual, normal time. So thank you all for coming and participating, and look forward to seeing you again.